Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
And today, guys, we're going to be talking about how to find owner-occupant buyers or retail buyers, if you want to call them that. But we got a question from one of our listeners, Mike Rainherk. So again, thanks, Mike, for reaching out. And he said it would be extremely helpful to hear more about how Jeff finds owner-occupants who are interested in purchasing on terms, as well as what criteria he utilizes to vet them as purchasers. So let's dive into that, Jeff.
Okay.
How do we find owner-occupants?
All right. Well, first of all, let's talk about how do we find buyers in general, and then we'll be more specific toward owner-occupants.
Okay.
One of the ways that we've structured terms is that if we're looking for a rehabber, we're looking for a buy and hold investor. So we want to start building a buyer's list, right? And these are people that are looking for investment opportunities in our area. So let's talk about how you would build a buyer's list really quickly. This is obviously if we're wholesaling, and I don't want to go into this because it's different all over the country, but if you are wholesaling, you got to be careful about how you're potentially marketing what's going on with wholesaling all over the country. Like Illinois just outlawed wholesaling, and I can tell you there's all kinds of things going on here, and so you got to know what market you're working in and what the rules are. Here's what I would tell you the rules are primarily everywhere that I'm familiar with, is that you've got to be super careful of marketing a property you do not own. And that means that you better be careful of how you put something on Facebook or online and showing pictures of a property that is not your property. Yes, I understand that you have it under contract and that you have an equitable interest. I also understand that that argument's not always working anymore. So I'm going to give you some ideas, but you as a business owner have to decide what's in your best interest and how you're going to go about doing it. But just know that the more you draw attention to yourself, the more potential issues you could have. With the division of real estate in your area. Okay, so we want to build a buyer's list. And one of the easiest ways of doing so is networking. And whether it's at your RIA, whether it's at your meetups, here what we do, we run a couple of meetups and we're part of a RIA. And all three groups make you sign in when you come to this meeting. And then they email out that list to everyone. So everyone's got everyone's phone number and email. And I can tell you what we do. Rebecca will reach out to people and have a discussion with them about, hey, what are you interested in? What are you looking for? What's your buying criteria? And price range, area, type of property, all that kind of stuff. And we create a database of all our buyers with notes. Like literally we know, what people are doing, what they're potentially capable of. Buyers lie, by the way. And they tell you whatever they think you want to hear. They may tell you they're more experienced than they are, or that they understand how to work with a wholesaler, and then they don't. But we try to vet them the best that we can.
Mm-hmm.
We will. Obviously, we are posting stuff in Facebook looking for buyers. There's Facebook groups, Wholesaling Houses Full-Time, Wholesaling Houses Elite. There's multifamily groups. There's a ton of Facebook groups. LinkedIn's another good resource where you can start generating buyers. And title companies, all the resources that you're using, you should be using to try to increase your buyers list. Okay. Once you have your buyers list, anytime that you have a property that would be more for a rehabber or a buy and hold investor, you're going to reach out to those buyers in some way or another, whether it's an email, whether it's a text, or it's a phone call. Okay. There's other ways that you can go about it. There's plenty of softwares out there that allow you to pull cash buyers in your in that particular area over the last, 3 months, 6 months, a year. You could mail them, you could text them. There's a bunch of different ways to build your buyers list.
Right.
I've given you what I believe to be the easiest, and it's an ongoing process. If you're a wholesaler, you never stop at building your buyers list.
Yeah. And you should always be updating it, especially if you're geared more towards landlords, because, landlords are kind of tricky. One year they might buy two properties, the next year they might buy one. And then the following year they might not want any, right? So Jeff, are you still there? Did we lose you? Hold on, guys, 1 second. So you always need to be updating your buyers list. And even when it comes to, flippers or rehabbers, if you're looking for those guys, you should always be networking at the RIAs, because a lot of them hang out there. And that's where I initially built my buyers list as well. I just got everyone's card that I could, and I made a database. So.
Well, and you made a great point that buyers, rehabbers typically will take, they're rehabbers here that you included. I could bring you a deal and you could buy another deal tomorrow, right? You're not just looking for one deal. I know people that would buy 10 deals if I had 10 deals for them right now.
Yeah.
The rehabbers, if the numbers work, they're buyers for them. And for buy and hold, a lot of them have different criteria. A criteria that may or may not make any sense to me. And a buy and hold investor may buy one property and then may be done. They may not buy another property for years. Mm-hmm. So you're always trying to keep that list updated and build on it, because those buyers aren't great. You may find someone that buys two or three and then is done.
Right.
Different kind of buyers. Okay, so now let's kind of more focus on owner-occupants. If we wanted to sell the owner-occupants, and so we're selling pretty houses. As Ron LeGrand, one of my absolute mentors, would say, it's the pretty house business. And I agree. Most of these types of properties are in good condition or pristine condition, and we may be paying close to retail. Hopefully not. But we may be, and in a hot market, we can even and still make money on it.
Yeah.
So owner occupants, this is what I would recommend. And if you were doing this enough, it would make sense to create your own buyers list for this type of deal. Mm-hmm. However, if it's just sporadic. So, hey, I've got two owner occupant deals this month, but it's been, 3 months before I get another one. It's going to be super hard to create a buyer's list, because think about this. These buyers are short term. These buyers are looking for something now. And if you don't have something for them, they're going to go find something else, whether it's, a rental, whether it's a lease option, whether it's something else. So most of these buyers aren't going to stay on your list more than 2 months, maybe three. and then they're going to be gone. And they may be gone for a year or they may be gone forever. So if you're going to create a buyer's list, then you've got to have enough supply to keep these people, you know, making it worthwhile to have that buyer's list.
Right.
Really the best way to, again, create this buyer's list would be Facebook, social media in general, networking, and potentially some ads. But we're going to go through a whole list of people that I would reach out to, whether you're going to create a buyer's list or you just have a property that you want to try to get sold and you don't have a buyer's list. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, we don't have a buyer's list for owner occupants. We don't do it enough where we have, you know, 20, 30, 50, 100 people looking for owner financing to occupy.
Yeah. Well, and think about like how often that list would change. So if you just started creating a database of owner occupants, I mean, they might find a house, you know, in the next month, or they might just find a nice rental and they want to stay there for the next 2 years or something like that. So I don't know if there would be a big value necessarily in creating and maintaining.
If I was doing two to, you know, three, four, five owner occupant deals a month, I'd absolutely want a buyer's list. Oh, you know, you went and looked at this property, it didn't fit your needs, or hey, we gave it to someone else. You know, but let's make sure that, you know, you get the next one. I would definitely do that. But again, if owner occupant deals are not, you know, the regular focus, then yeah, I'm not gonna worry about building the buyer's list. I may come across people that, you know, for whatever reason, they're looking at one property and it doesn't fit their needs. I need a bigger house, or I need it in a different area, or I don't have that much down payment. Yeah, I certainly want to take that information and keep it and see if I can find something that will fit their needs based on, I already know what they're capable of doing. You know, if they've got enough money and they can afford, you know, a certain payment, I'd much rather go try to find that deal for them and have it done then find the property and then try to find the buyer.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so here's what we like to do. So we're gonna reach out to realtors, and more specifically, realtors that deal in owner financing. So that they actually have clients that are looking for properties they can get into with owner financing. So how do you find these people? I can tell you how I found them, and it was by total accident, but talking to people at RIA events, talking to title companies, talking to mortgage brokers, talking to people that are doing creative financing in your market. And I got invited to a mastermind group. And all of a sudden I met, you know, 10, 12, 13, 15 people that do owner financing to some degree. And the vast majority of them are licensed realtors. And really, they're not the ones going and negotiating the deals, per se, not all of them at least. They have buyers. So if you can find people that deal in certain demographics. So there's a number of Hispanic realtors in this group, and they deal with the Hispanic community, that they're not W-2 employees. They're not, you know, they may or may not have a green card. They may or may not have a social security number. They're going to struggle to get a conventional loan, but they have cash. They've got some money, and those are great people for owner financing. Muhammad, who works with our team, is from Iraq. He's part of a community of people from Iraq. And he has already demonstrated that, hey, I'm the housing kind of authority. when you have questions, you come to me, and now people are coming to him saying, hey, can you help me get into a house? This is the way that it's through those networks that you do that. So you want to search out realtors, and you may have to have some discussions, and you may, but you'll find them. They're around. You're going to have to do a little searching though. Okay. So Craigslist and any kind of online advertising. Okay. This is again, the warning that I gave you before. So if you're going to put an ad on there, like house for sale, got to be careful. You know, make sure that you know what the situation is. We do that and we don't do that. It just depends. The good thing is that our seller knows exactly what we're doing. So the one thing I don't want is I don't want the seller to not know and then see this ad online and get very irate with us and you know, file a complaint because they're not happy with what we're doing. I will make it very clear to the seller that we're not going to be the buyer, that we've got to go find the owner occupant that's going to live here. And if they're okay with giving us some time, our money, our resources going and trying to do that for them.
Right.
Okay. So Facebook groups. So there's a ton of different groups that you can be a part of, in both real estate. But there may even be smaller groups in, like, a friend of mine told me about when they get some rural properties that they go and join a Facebook group that's just around that rural area. And they got to get approved, and you know, they're asked, why do they want to be a part of this? And they said, because we've got a house that we'd like to sell. And they put it on there, and they actually get interest in it. So
yeah.
Do some research on social media on how you can market, you know, what you do and how you do it, if not the actual deal itself. And you might either or both.
Okay.
Obviously, I'm going to send it out to my buyers list. Not necessarily because I think that someone will want it for, you know, a buy and hold, although every once in a while you're surprised. I'm more interested in, they're realtors that are on our buyers list that may have buyers for this property. Plus, investors do look for properties themselves, right? To live in. And most of the investors that are full-time don't have W-2 income and may struggle to get loans from banks. So creative financing may be a way. And if not, maybe they know of someone, a family member, another, they have a buyer, whatever. And so I want to put it in front of them as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, we've already talked about the RIA and meetups. It's important. This business is about networking. You've got to create connections. And you don't have to be best buddies with everyone, but you've got to create relationships. And I would tell you that as far as relationships for me in this market, people know me as, been around a long time, done this for a long time, and, creative, willing to finance. People come to me with creative financing questions or deals or, bring us leads just because they don't know what to do with them. They think that maybe I can figure it out. Well, that's what you want, right? I mean, you want to create those networks where people bring you leads or buyers or whatever. So, helps you continue to do your business and take it to other levels.
Yeah.
Bandit signs. We haven't done this lately, but they work, certainly. And what I would do is I would handwrite, no bank qualifying, owner will finance. What I try to do is around the house, and I would say 15 to 20 of them, on all major streets. I used to try to do arrows pointing to guide them there, but, that got too difficult. So now I basically just put the address and so people can just find it. But all around any major streets, you know, the entrances to Walmart, to Home Depot, any high traffic areas within the vicinity, you may have some issues with code enforcement. You know, probably the best way to deal with this is put them up, you know, late Friday afternoon, take them down Sunday evening, because you may get calls saying that they don't like your signs or they just start disappearing. But they work, and they generate buyers that you wouldn't generate otherwise.
Yeah.
The last two that I would suggest, again, are more of networking. So I'd contact mortgage brokers, and I would ask them, hey, have you dealt with any clients in the last few months that couldn't qualify for a loan but had significant down payments? Or do you come across people like that? Maybe we can work something out. You know, I can finance them into a house now, and then you can refinance them, you know, at the end of their term. We'll build this pipeline for you, and you know, we'll continue to do business that way. Title companies as well. They know of people that are looking for properties, that are doing owner financing, that are looking for owner financing. The more title companies you can create a relationship with, the better. That's a little difficult because they all want your business, and you probably can't give business to all of them. But you know, one of the things that you should do is, hey, if you find me the buyer, you find me the lead, I'll give you my business for this deal for sure. But it's those relationships and connections that will go pretty far. So I think we just gave you 8 resources to find, you know, owner occupant buyers, and that's about what we do. And we may do we do several of them every single time. We may not do all of them every single time. We may incorporate more if we're having a hard time getting interest in the property. And now let's talk about vetting that particular owner occupant.
Can you just give that list just in short order?
Realtors, Craigslist or online marketing,
right?
Facebook groups and marketplace, buyers list,
okay,
and meetups.
Yep.
Bandit signs, mortgage brokers, and title companies.
Awesome. Okay. Cool. Yeah, I just wanted to sum that up.
Okay. So here's what we do when we vet our buyers. So let's look at this from one of two ways. Let's say that we're the seller. So we're either buying this property and we're selling on owner financing, we're staying in the middle, right? Or somehow. Now I would vet almost everyone, and it's pretty simple. What I have them do is fill out an application, and I use a company called smartmove.com. It's, I think, Experian. And all I have to do is send the person a link and tell them, go on, fill out the application, hit submit. They pay for it too. And SmartMove will then, you know, within 5 minutes, send me a background check, a criminal check, and a credit check. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I'm a criminal check. I'm not going to deal with criminals. So if there's anything on there they have explaining to do, then we're going to have that discussion. And my experience is that if there's stuff on there, unless you're super motivated because you're not getting much interest and they've got lots of money, that's going to be a problem waiting to happen. Just my experience. But sizable down payments will overcome a lot of issues. So that's something that you would determine. But the credit check, really what I'm looking for is two things. One, that whatever problem they may or may not have, that most of them will have some kind of credit challenge. And I just don't want it to be a chronic credit challenge. So you had a health problem and you couldn't work for a while, or you got divorced, or I lost my job and my house got foreclosed on. If it's an isolated time where everything happened, that's understandable. I can deal with stuff like that. Those are the people I want to help.
Yeah.
If it's, for the last 10 years, you've had collections, now you're a chronic problem. And, what's to say you're not going to be a problem for me?
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want those people that claim bankruptcy every
7 years.
7 years. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So that's what I'm looking for. And then I'm going to do one last thing, and I'm going to send them over. So I work with one or two mortgage brokers, and I'm going to send them to my mortgage broker. I may send them the credit report so I don't have to pull it again. And I want them to tell me what realistically will they need to do to be refinanceable. And so if I'm looking at I can give them a 3-year term. I want to know what's the realistic chances of them getting a loan in 3 years.
Yeah.
And what will they need to do? Will they need to go on credit repair? What needs to happen to put them in a situation where they can be successful? If my mortgage broker says, Jeff, no way, they're not going to be able to get a loan in 3 years, then I'm going to go back to my buyer and tell them, this is what my mortgage broker thinks. What would you do if you're not able to refinance the house? I don't want to take all your money and leave you with no house. But they may say, look, we're okay with it. We're expecting that, over the course of time, we'll be able to pay it, significantly down, and, or we'll just sell it, or, whatever. And now you have a choice to make, right? So background check, criminal check, credit check, mortgage broker check. Okay, if I'm wholesaling the property, if I'm wholesaling it to another investor, I'm not going to deal with all that. Okay, I'm not even going to pull a credit background, nothing. Okay, if I'm doing an owner occupant, and I am just wholesaling it, so I'm just going to be out of it, I may do that. But this is typically what I say to most of my sellers. So let's just take that example on the house that we've talked about a number of times that I did the video on. Okay, it needed like $40,000, $50,000 in work. I ended up getting $50,000 down payment from a buyer. Okay, and I didn't do a credit check. I didn't do a background check. I didn't send them to a mortgage broker, and I wholesaled it. I'm out of it, right? Mm-hmm. One, my seller didn't care one way or the other, so she didn't ask for it, so I didn't do it. But I've told this seller, and I tell almost every seller this, hey, if you ever have an issue, let me know. Do you think I might be interested? I mean, I just sold this property for $50,000 more than what I would have to sell it for. Again, I would assume that they will do some work over some time and make the property better. Mm-hmm. So if they were to default in 6 months, I'm happy to take over the seller's position, which is whatever principal pay downs occurred, whatever down payment that they received. I'm happy to get back involved and resolve this situation for the seller as long as she wants me to be in that position. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
So based on that, sometimes I don't do that credit check. Sometimes I do. It would depend on who my buyer is and what the situation is with my seller. But if I'm okay getting back involved, what's the point? I don't need to. Unless my seller says, I want it.
Yeah. Yeah. And if they, if they are giving a large down payment, like you said, I just wanted to reiterate that point. If they're putting down $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, they have significant reason to make it work, right?
down payment will overcome a lot of issues.
Yeah.
So if we're asking for 10-12%, which may be, you know, $40,000-$50,000, but they've got 80, that will overcome significant issues. Well, your credit's really bad. And I don't, you know, after talking to my mortgage broker, I don't know if you'll be able to get financing within the term that we're giving you. And my buyer says, I'm good with that. And I've got this much money down. I did that with a seller in Idaho a few years ago. And we offered him $7,000 down. And then we found a buyer that was putting down like 45 or something on a $116,000 home. Uh-huh. And I went back to him like, so are you open to modifying the terms if I got you a whole bunch more money down? And I said, but the buyer's credit's terrible. And chances are he'll default. And he's like, I'm getting how much money down? And he was like, yeah, I don't care. And then he actually contacted me, and, you know, because I told him the same thing. You ever run into a problem, let me know. So I told him, I'm happy to get involved. I'm happy to resolve this whole issue. And he's like, well, why would I want you to resolve it if I can resolve it and have all the benefits to it? I'm like, you're right. You don't need me, but if you want me, I'm there. And, you know, the guy ended up deeding back the house for $5,000. So, you know, he basically got the same house back, but made $30,000+ on it. And, you know, now has the house back.
I think we've talked about that too on the podcast.
Yeah. So, that's really the only one that I've had in the last 5 years that, and it didn't even go bad. He wasn't even behind the payment.
I'll take a couple of those.
He was just becoming late, and yeah, the problem was coming. It just hadn't come yet. But he's the only one in the last 5 years that I've had even close to a default.
Yeah, yeah, and he lost out big when he did default. So
yeah, well, apparently, you know, he had a drug problem, and his life had fallen apart. $5,000 meant more to him than. And I don't think he realized, I could just go sell this house. I don't understand. But yeah, because it was a contract for deed, but he could have gone and sold the house and it certainly recouped the $35,000 he got instead of $5,000. But
yeah,
that's up to him. So really, if I'm doing it, I'm going to pull up the credit check all the time.
Yeah,
if
right.
It's for me. If it's for my seller, it'll depend. If I'm willing to commit to being in the middle, then it's probably not as important for me to pull that unless the seller really wants it.
Yeah, for sure. And based on what you said, that's kind of how I vet my tenants. And there's a ton of services out there, like you mentioned, Smart Move. When I list a rental, I use Rentler.com and I use them because that's where I list my property, and then they offer a free screening, or not a free screening, it's free to the landlord, but they offer a screening service where they do the same thing. They pull they actually look for evictions, they pull the credit reports, and then they look for any criminal history.
Yep.
And I don't like to, you know, I won't lease to anyone that has any kind of major criminal history, especially in recent years. And then as far as credit scores, I'm looking for someone that's about 600 or above. And then of course they have to have the money. So it's income verification, but
yep.
So a lot of the same ways. And definitely if you're going to do a lot more of these deals, definitely use a service like Smart Move. I haven't checked that.
And there's a ton of other ones too.
There's a ton of them. They're pretty common now. I think Zillow even has a screening service that they offer. Yeah. So they're out there. You should use them, especially if you're doing a lot of these deals. And then, like you said, Jeff, you should be building a buyer's list. If you're doing a lot of these deals, if you're doing, you know, a couple a month, you should be building a buyer's list of you know, owner occupants or retail.
Well, the buyer's list should come from whatever marketing you're doing on a particular house. I mean, if you got 15 or 20 people that had some interest in a particular property, guess what? at least a handful of those are now on your buyer's list, yeah, at least for the next few weeks to a couple of months.
Yeah, so definitely get their contact info and, yep, and follow up.
How much down do you have? What can you afford monthly? Those will quickly tell me, yep, we need to go try to find a property in this area, or nah. These are more of like a lease option type person. And you'll get calls with like, I got $1,000 down, or, $5,000 down. It's like, hey, And our response would be is, do you have an IRA, any kind of retirement account that you can borrow from, any family member? You're going to need more than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we've given a ton of information on this topic, a ton of resources, your specific 8 resources that you use to find these buyers. So, I think we pretty well covered that one. So we'll wrap it up here. Guys, if you want to reach us, you can find all of our episodes online at thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. We're also on Facebook at the Creative Financing Podcast. So you can reach out to us there. You can leave us a message. And we also have a hotline that we set up for anyone who has questions or concerns or comments. Or if you're out there doing these kind of deals, if you're using creative financing in your business, then we want to talk to you. We want to get you on the show because you're proof of concept that you can go out there and execute these strategies and make money. So that hotline number, 877-409-8090, 877-409-8090. And also, if you text creative financing to that number, to that hotline number, we'll send you a link to access a special video that Jeff put together on walking you through how to come up with creative financing offers on a single family house where he was actually, I think you sold that one to a retail buyer. So
sort of
ish. Yeah. So it really, really well done video. He takes you start to finish, right from his CRM Podio, from where the lead came in at. He walks you through the comps and, evaluating the market rents, and then how he comes up with the offers. He runs you through the numbers. So very well done video. So if you want that, again, text our hotline number, 877-409-8090, and you'll get a link for that. Any last words, Jeff?
Always looking for great questions, topic ideas, deals that we can take and analyze for you on our show. We want to continue to keep bringing you quality content. So want to know what you guys are looking for. And second, always looking for people to work with all over the country. We have 2 different apprentice programs. If you're interested, just give us a call on the hotline. I will call you back with some details.
Awesome. Cool, guys. Until next time, create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.